Christine Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. The financial failure of the fishing processor, Akatan, prevented it from going to Kuskokwim Bay this summer. That left some fishermen in the lurch. Also, a group of people and organizations in Bristol Bay holds an annual fly fishing guide academy for local youth. That and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
Places like Washington State have a long history of commercial oyster farming, and that means a long record of testing for deadly shellfish toxins. Alaska's, by comparison, is relatively new, but that hasn't stopped a growing number of people interested in cultivating oysters. Alaskans are working together to try to make that industry safe and profitable. By tracking where paralytic shellfish poisoning occurs, more of the state's seafood could make it to market. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins explains.
Alaska's shellfish producers have to go through rigorous testing routinely to make sure their product is safe to eat. When the weather is warm, they submit a sample to the state's lab every week, sometimes more. That's where Matthew Forrester comes in. Lots of people start their morning with a blended drink, but the mixture Forrester is whipping up won't become breakfast.
We often describe it as making an oyster milkshake. You know, it just makes a slurry.
Forrester tests commercial food for the Department of Environmental Conservation. Today he's examining shellfish from three different farms. After pulverizing the oysters to a beige mush, he boils the mixture with acid, which simulates digestion. And when the mixture cools, it gets spun around to separate the remaining oyster parts. What's left goes into a tiny syringe.
The testing consists of injecting three mice and then observing for death and time of death.
Not all of the lab mice will die from paralytic shellfish poisoning, but on occasion, some do. That's when Forrester has to send an email to the farmer to let them know their mussels or oysters aren't safe to eat.
It feels bad. That's the best way to put it. No one wants to deliver bad news. But I also know many of the farmers, they don't want to get bad news either, but they would rather know and ensure the safety of their customers than not know.
This summer, Forrester has had to deliver the bad news to five commercial oyster farms, mostly in Southeast. That's an uptick from last year. And some of those producers lost out on business longer than previous years. It wound up costing one farmer I spoke with over $30,000. The toxin that causes paralytic shellfish poisoning is produced by harmful algal blooms. The algae can flourish in warm water. But Jenny Eckert, a fisheries professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, says right now, the warm water doesn't appear to be the problem.
The ocean this year was actually, from all accounts that I've been hearing, was fairly close to normal.
Still, she says the harmful algae from previous warming could be taking a nap at the bottom of the ocean.
So you could sort of get a buildup of this resting phase in the sediments during these warm years that then can then persist in other years.
But Eckert stresses it's not just one thing that causes the problem. It's a combination of factors, the perfect storm. More fresh water from glacial melt is also thought to be changing the ocean. Michael Jamros works with tribes to monitor areas in Southeast Alaska for toxic shellfish. He says some years are just volatile.
Yeah, that's what we've seen so far.
This summer, his lab has documented high levels of paralytic shellfish poisoning, especially around Ketchikan and Prince of Wales Island. But it's unclear what that means. He says Alaska's record of tracking this is still relatively young.
It's only been in the past decade or two where we've really been looking at it closely enough to start even being able to model this.
And that's compared to nearly 80 years of testing in places like Washington State. But there are more coordinated efforts happening in Alaska. A new map will show where the toxin is cropping up all around the state. Jamros thinks that's the future when it comes to tracking paralytic shellfish poisoning.
While we can't predict it here, we've noticed certain beaches in certain areas seem to be very low in toxicity compared to other ones. So there are spots that are less prone to these toxic blooms.
And by identifying those spots over time, oyster farmers might have a better chance of routinely bringing their product to market. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, with help from Henry Leisha in Anchorage.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The financial failure of the processing vessel Akatan prevented it from going to Kuskokwim Bay this summer, and for the second summer in a row, fishermen in the coastal community of Quinnahawk had nowhere to sell their catch. Many in the village are now struggling to make ends meet. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
Timothy Johnny Boy Matthews doesn't remember when he started fishing commercially. He must have been 5 or maybe 6. On most summer evenings, Matthews' father would load him and his brother into a wooden boat he built himself and sail into the Kuskokwim Bay. They would net salmon for the next 12 hours, working through the short, sunny night. Matthews' job on board was to count the reds, kings, and chums his father caught, though eventually, as the night wore on, he would fall asleep in the boat's cabin. When his father sold the fish, he made sure to share the profits with his sons.
Every time he pays me, he would tell my mom, here's the money he got for sleeping.
Matthews has a family of his own now. He bought his own limited entry permit a decade ago and spent his summers selling silvers to a newly opened processing plant in Platinum, owned by the Coastal Villages Region Fund, a corporation that is supposed to use its Bering Sea fishing quota to support economic development in the area. Matthews remembered when fishermen could make about $6,000 a year selling to Platinum. And some in Quinnahawk say that in good years, expert fishermen could earn more than $20,000 a season. But Coastal Villages decided not to open its plant last year, saying it was losing money. There was nowhere to sell fish and limited prospects for any sort of summer work.
Due to no income in our family right now, it's really hard on us.
Matthews works as the maintenance man at the local Head Start during the school year. But in the summers, he says he doesn't have any money coming in. His phone's already been cut off.
Our water and sewer is going to be cut pretty soon.
What do you do if it's cut?
I don't know.
After 2 years without a buyer, a lot of the fishermen in Quinnahawk tell similar stories. Jimmy Annever is an elder here. He worked as a commercial fisherman for over 60 years, first in Bristol Bay, then in the Kuskokwim Bay, right up until the Platinum plant closed.
High prices in the stores fill up all those credit cards all the way up to $10,000 or more like that. It's hard to live here in Alaska.
Last year, a fish broker tried to buy in Quinnahawk, but Coastal Villages refused to lease him equipment. And now, a second plan has fallen through.
We had really high hopes. All the fishermen were getting excited. We were getting excited. And then we got the news that he's not coming. Everybody just, oh no, not again.
Warren Jones is the CEO of the local Native Village Corporation. Before the Platinum plant opened, he was the operations manager of a processing facility right here in Quinnahawk.
Okay, so this is the old fish plant?
Yes. Everything was running good.
Not anymore. The plant is sunken and rusted. It's a rainy, blustery day, and a door clangs in the wind as we tour the facility.
You'd have people working. Fresh salmon come in right into the processing plant.
Jones says that he tried to get Coastal Villages to give or sell Quinnahawk some of the plant's unused buildings. There's a housing shortage here.
But as you can see, they're sitting right there, rotting away.
As a leader in the local Native Corporation, Jones says he's doing what he can by hiring locals part-time.
Like I offer, you can work 2 weeks and 2 weeks off, so the other person get a little paycheck too. People are suffering and winter's coming. And the corporation here is doing as much as we can. I mean, we're extending their credits. People are running out of fuel. We can't let nobody freeze to death. So we let them charge more. They're my people. We gotta help them.
Jones says that at this point, he keeps several gallons of heating fuel on hand at his home. He never knows when someone might knock on his door at 2 a.m. in the winter, asking for heat. For KYUK, I'm Teresa Kotsarilis.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Bristol Bay is world famous for its commercial sockeye salmon fishery and also its world-class sport fishing opportunities. The commercial fishery has always been in reach to kids growing up in the region, but not necessarily the sport fish side. A group of people and organizations has been working to change that for about the last 10 years, running an annual fly fishing guide academy for local youth in the Bristol Bay area. KDLG's Zoe Laird spoke with Academy students, among them the daughter of the Bear Trail Lodge owner and a return student from King Salmon.
Tim Troll and Lukey Acklecock cooked up the first Guide Academy session, taking a steam bath in Equok almost 10 years ago.
He was concerned that there weren't very many young people actually getting into that sport fishery, and I was equally concerned, and we were both on the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust Board of Directors.
The annual Academy's goal is to train youth in the various aspects of the industry, from fly fishing and running rivers to hospitality and serving high-end clients. Kwejak Aspeland is a guide from King Salmon for the summer seasons at Bear Trail Lodge. Like many Bristol Bay youth, he grew up immersed in the commercial fishing industry in King Salmon. Aspeland gained exposure to guiding through the Academy, which he attended consecutively in 2012 and 2013.
You know, there's this incredible industry that so many of the kids don't even know about. I mean, they're here, they're ready to go, they know the river more than, you know, better than anyone else.
The Academy became Aspeland's transition into the sport fishing industry, and he in turn became a connecting bridge for others. He has fished with curious locals as a kind of outreach on the water.
It's so much fun fishing people from the area. So I think that's huge too, to not only get the youth that, you know, could be potential guides, but get the community in support of, you know, the guiding scene.
And in doing so, promote broader career options for local youth like himself. During the final exam at the Guide Academy, known as Client Day, the same philosophy of openness is demonstrated. Students must teach volunteer clients how to fly fish using flies and leaders the students prepared. Clients are sourced from the community, many of whom are elders, so they see what the lodges are doing and what their children, nieces, nephews, and grandchildren love about fly fishing. Riley, Nancy Morris Lyon's 18-year-old daughter, attended two Academy sessions and looks forward to lodge employment, a life of fly fishing and guiding.
I kind of wanted that to be the way I travel the world, because I want to see a lot.
This summer, she guided Bear Trail flyout and float trips and tried work on a commercial fishing vessel. Riley understands the critical importance of salmon for future careers like hers in the commercial or sports industries.
Everyone needs work, and salmon provide jobs for millions of people, and I think that's great. And as long as, you know, there's openings and closings, and the salmon are still protected to come back every year.
Next season, Riley will hold her captain's license and plans to guide clients by boat from her mom's lodge. The Bear Trail will host the 2018 Bristol Bay Fishing and Guide Academy, teaching the next group of young sports fishermen about guiding clients and their own careers. For KDLG, I'm Zoe Laird.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KYUK's Teresa Kotsarilis in Bethel, the Alaska Energy Desk's Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, and KDLG's Zoe Laird in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.